Section 3. Hoover Responds. An American Story. In December 1929, Mayor Joseph Heffernan of Youngstown, Ohio, listened impatiently to fellow public officials assembled in the Cleveland Chamber of Commerce Hall. He had been called to one of a series of conferences on unemployment that President Hoover had arranged. At the conference, Heffernan grew restless as he listened to the other speakers. He felt that it would take too long to pass their confident proposals for ending unemployment, and by that time, it would be too late to prevent a depression. He asked the other conference members, "Why not tell people the truth?" Youngstown business leaders criticized Heffernan for trying to tell his constituents how bad the economic outlook was. Heffernan later recalled that one of them said to him, "Don't emphasize hard times and everything will be all right." The man who rebuked Mayor Heffernan expressed what many, including President Hoover himself, believed in late 1929. The country merely needed to regain its confidence. As the crisis worsened, Hoover took steps to help the economy recover, but only within the limits of his philosophy of government. Adapted from the Great Depression. Promoting Recovery. On Friday, October 25th, the day after Black Thursday, President Hoover issued a statement assuring the nation that industry was on a sound and prosperous basis. In March 1930, he told the public that the worst effects of the crash will have passed during the next 60 days. Critics derided his optimism as conditions worsened. Hoover, however, hoped to downplay the public's fears. He wanted to avoid more bank runs and layoffs by urging consumers and business leaders to become more rational in their decision-making. Voluntary efforts and public works. Despite his soothing words, Hoover was seriously worried about the economy. He organized a series of conferences bringing together the heads of banks, railroads, and other big businesses, as well as labor and government officials. He won a pledge from industry to keep factories open and to stop slashing wages. By 1931, however, business leaders had abandoned these pledges. Hoover's next step was to increase public works, government-financed building projects. The resulting construction jobs could replace some of those lost in the private sector. He urged governors and mayors throughout the nation to increase public works spending. Hoover's actions did spur construction increases, but the effort made up for only a small fraction of the jobs lost in the private sector. The only way the government could create enough new jobs would be to massively increase government spending, which Hoover refused to do. The problem was that someone had to pay for public works projects. If the government raised taxes to pay for them, it would take money away from consumers and hurt businesses that were already struggling. If the government decided to keep taxes low and run a budget deficit instead, spending more money than it collected in taxes, it would have to borrow the money from banks. If the government did this, less money would be available for businesses that wanted to expand and for consumers who wanted mortgages or other loans. Hoover feared that deficit spending would actually delay an economic recovery. The midterm election. As the congressional elections of 1930 approached, most Americans felt that worsening unemployment posed a grave threat to their well-being. Citizens blamed the party in power for the stumbling economy. The Republicans lost 52 seats and their majority in the House of Representatives. They held on to the Senate by a single vote. Reading check. Examining. Why did Hoover oppose deficit spending? Pumping money into the economy. Hoover soon turned his attention to the problem of money. There was very little in the economy now that so many banks had collapsed. The government, he believed, had to make sure that banks could make loans to corporations so they could expand production and rehire workers. Government. Trying to rescue the banks. The president asked the Federal Reserve Board to put more currency into circulation, but the board refused. In an attempt to ease the money shortage, Hoover set up the National Credit Corporation, or NCC, in October 1931. The NCC created a pool of money to enable troubled banks to continue lending money in their communities. Hoover then persuaded a number of New York bankers to contribute to the NCC. Their contributions, however, did not meet the nation's needs. By 1932, Hoover concluded that the only way to provide funding for borrowers was for the government to do the lending. He requested that Congress set up the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, or RFC, to make loans to banks, railroads, and agricultural institutions. By the spring of 1932, the RFC had lent over $238 million to approximately 160 banks, 60 railroads, and 18 building and loan organizations. The RFC was overly cautious, however. It failed to increase its loans in sufficient amounts to meet the need, and the economy continued its decline. Direct help for citizens. From the start, Hoover strongly opposed the federal government's participation in relief, money that went directly to impoverished families. He believed that only state and city governments should dole out relief. By the spring of 1932, however, they were running out of money. In 1932, political support was building for a relief measure, and Congress passed the Emergency Relief and Construction Act. Although Hoover vetoed the measure, Congress overrode it. The new act called for $1.5 billion for public works and $300 million in loans to the states for direct relief. By this time, however, the new program could not reverse the accelerating collapse. Reading check. Summarizing. Why did Hoover oppose the federal government's participation in relief programs? In an angry mood. In the months after the Wall Street crash, Americans had seemed resigned to bad economic news. By 1931, however, they were growing increasingly discontented, and open acts of revolt began to occur. Hunger marches. In January 1931, around 500 men and women in Oklahoma City, shouting angrily about hunger and joblessness, broke into a grocery store and looted it. Crowds began showing up at rallies, and hunger marches held by the American Communist Party, which was eager to take advantage of national problems to change the American form of government. On December 5, 1932, a freezing day in the nation's capital, around 1,200 hunger marchers assembled and chanted, "Feed the hungry, tax the rich." Police herded them into a blocked-off area, where they had to spend the night sleeping on the sidewalk or in trucks. The police denied them food, water, and medical treatment until some members of Congress insisted on the marchers' right to petition their government. They were then released and permitted to march to Capitol Hill. Farmers' Revolt. In the summer of 1932, farmers also took matters into their own hands. Beginning in the boom days of World War I, many farmers had heavily mortgaged their land to pay for seed, feed, and equipment. After the war, prices sank so low that farmers could not even earn back their costs, let alone make a profit. Between 1930 and 1934, creditors foreclosed on nearly 1 million farms, taking possession of them and evicting the families. Some farmers began destroying their crops in a desperate attempt to raise crop prices by reducing the supply. In Nebraska, grain growers burned corn to heat their homes in the winter. In Iowa, food growers forcibly prevented the delivery of vegetables to distributors. Georgia dairy farmers blocked highways and stopped milk trucks, emptying the milk cans into ditches. The Bonus Marchers. In appreciation of the World War I service of American soldiers and sailors, Congress in 1924 had enacted a $1,000 bonus for each veteran to be distributed in 1945. By 1931, however, in response to the financial straits of many veterans, Congress passed legislation allowing veterans to borrow up to half the amount of the bonus. The following year, the veterans, many of them homeless, demanded their entire bonus immediately. In May 1932, a small group of Portland, Oregon veterans set off on a month-long march to Washington to petition Congress for the bonus. As they moved east, other veterans joined them, until they numbered about 1,000. Wearing ragged military uniforms, they trudged along the highways or rode the rails, singing old war songs and reminiscing about Army days. The press termed the marchers the Bonus Army. Once in Washington, the marchers camped in Hoovervilles. As weeks went by, additional veterans joined them until the bonus army swelled to 15,000. President Hoover acknowledged the veterans' petition rights, but refused to meet with them. When the Senate voted the new bonus bill down, veterans waiting outside the Capitol began to grumble until one of their leaders started them singing America. Gradually, their anger cooled, and many returned home. A significant number of the marchers, however, stayed on, since they had no job prospects. Some moved from the camps to unoccupied buildings downtown. In late July, Hoover ordered the buildings cleared. The police made the first try, but one of them panicked and fired into a crowd, killing two veterans. The Washington, D.C. government then called in the Army. Army Chief of Staff Douglas MacArthur gave the veterans 1 hour to gather their possessions and go home. MacArthur deployed cavalry troops, infantry, and tanks to enforce the order. A Federal Trade Commission member, A. Everett McIntyre, watched as the infantry fixed their bayonets and also fixed their gas masks over their faces. At orders, they brought their bayonets at thrust and moved in. The bayonets were used to jab people to make them move. Soon, unarmed veterans were on the run with 700 soldiers at their heels. The soldiers tear gassed stragglers and burned the shacks. Tear gas killed a baby boy. The nationwide press coverage and newsreel images of veterans under assault by troops presented an ugly picture to the public. The routing of the veterans hounded the president throughout his 1932 re-election campaign. Hoover failed to resolve the crisis of the Depression, but he did more to expand the economic role of the federal government than any previous president. The Reconstruction Finance Corporation marked the first time the federal government had established a federal agency to stimulate the economy during peacetime. It was the image of the routed bonus marchers and the lingering depression, however, that shaped the public's perception of President Hoover. Reading check. Evaluating. How did Americans react as the Depression continued? Technology skill builder. Building a database. Why learn this skill? Do you have a collection of sports cards, CDs, or DVDs? Have you ever kept a list of the names, addresses, and phone numbers of friends and relatives? If you have collected information and kept it in a list or file, then you have created a database. Learning the skill. An electronic database is a collection of facts that are stored in a file on a computer. The information is organized in fields. A database can be organized and reorganized in any way that is useful to you. By using a database management system, or DBMS, special software developed for record keeping, you can easily add, delete, change, or update information. You give commands to the computer that tell it what to do with the information, and it follows these commands. When you want to retrieve information, the computer searches through the file, finds the information, and displays it on the screen. Practicing the skill. The Great Depression is a well-known period in American history. Follow these steps to build a database containing the events that led to the Great Depression and its effects on the country. 1. Determine what facts you want to include in your database. 2. Follow instructions to set up fields in the DBMS that you are using. Then enter each item of data in its assigned field. 3. Determine how you want to organize the facts in the database, chronologically by the date of the event or alphabetically by the name of the event. 4. Follow the instructions in your computer program to place the information in the order you selected. Applying the skill. Building a database. Bring current newspapers or news magazines to class. Using the steps just described, build a database of current political events in the United States. Include a brief explanation of why the database is organized the way it is and how it might be used in class. Glencoe's Skill Builder Interactive Workbook CD-ROM Level 2 provides instruction and practice in key social studies skills.